Good morning, everyone. This is Martin Zender, and I make sense 5 days a week from a laundry room. I make sense for a living from a laundry room 5 days a what? What? 5 days a week. The beautiful week, the symmetrical week, the gorgeous week includes a hump day, Wednesday in there, around which you can wrap 3 days on each side. Boom, boom, boom. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, hump day. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's perfect. It's if you put the hump day in the middle, then you have this orb on either side around it that just kind of swirls around it like Wednesday's the North Star of the week. Not even the Beatles could escape the genius of the week because they sing 8 days a week, I love you. 8 days a week is not enough to show I care. But even if you want to screw it up and say 8 days a week, which is no such thing as 8 days a week, you have to screw it up based on the proper assessment of the week. It can only be screwed up. You can only break the rules once you know the rules. The Beatles broke the rules, but they knew the rules. And now we are also learning the rules. It's storming again in Fort Lauderdale, and I've heard some epic thunder before the broadcast. I hope more of it comes our way because I love to be on the side of the God who has such power. Yes, I want to be on his side, and we are on his side. So the task that was given to Adam, God gave Adam a job, and it was to count the years. I mean, what else did he have to do? Well, yeah, he had to make love to Eve constantly. Would have been tough, but that's like on your daily schedule. Number one, make love to my wife. Number two, have a baby, another baby. Number three, tend to the weeds, plant the garden. Number four, keep track of days. And he does it not only for himself, but he's also doing it for us. Adam is. And to this end, we owe him a paean, a praise, at least a word of gratitude. So Adam was given this task to count years. It's evident when you read the document of enumeration. I went through this before. It's in Genesis chapter 5. I could go there again, but you know, I don't want to overly burden you with all the generations of Adam. But these were recorded by him, which began with the sixth day, of course, the day when he was created. And in this enumeration, the years are counted, and a completely, get this, I'm going to use a bold word here. Are you ready for this? A completely uncomplicated calendar is introduced to us. An uncomplicated calendar, which can be described as a calendar of generations or a calendar of births. This calendar of generations gives the number of years to the birth of a son, and again counts from this son the years to the birth of the son's son. Unbroken. This is why I use the word unbroken when I talk about the chronology. So the unbroken count allows us, you and me, living in the year 5989 FA from Adam, to count without any problems. Or as they say, as Señor Ricardo would say, no problema. We can count without any problems to Noah, which is the year 1056 from the creation of Adam. Anybody can do that. It's quite easy. If you start, of course, you have to start with the year one after the first year is completed. After the first year is completed, that's year one. Like year one doesn't start at the beginning. It starts after the first year is completed. So in this case, the beginning of the count is aligned with the count of God, who teaches us already, Genesis 1:5, the correct counting by beginning the count of days with the first day after the first evening and the morning has passed. In other words, there was an evening and a morning the first day. So after the days pass, then you count it as a morning and an evening. Some people get screwed up with the 6,000 years. They say, Martin, we have 1,000 years left. No. No, the end of 5,000 years, the end of 6,000 years is at the end of See, I even get confused here. I mean, don't be panicked by the fact that I'm confused, because I'm basically a moron when it comes to these things, and I rely on other people. So you're not relying on my wisdom here. You're relying on the wisdom of others that I am bringing to you. But this makes sense. You don't have a day until the day is past. And you don't have 6,000 years until the 6,000 years is past. So you remember this confusion with the year 2000? Like, when does it actually start? The 7,000th year doesn't begin until the 6,000 years are completed. Then the 7,000th year begins. So when the year 6,000 is struck, that would be the end of 6,000 years. Am I making sense? I hope so. The correct counting by beginning the count of days with the first day after the first evening of the morning is past. This corresponds to the mode of counting of the ages still in use today, describing a child as being... Oh, here it is. Okay, thank you. Bader uses a simple example here. Describing a child as being 1 year old, not until after 1 year has passed. So the kid's not one. And we call him one throughout the entire year. He's turning two, right? He's still one. How old's your kid? One. But he's actually becoming two. But he's not two, even though he's got his second year already under his belt, but he doesn't become two until his second birthday. Are you getting me? So the first time bridge in the world, it really frustrates me that I'm really this dumb. I'm really this stupid that I can't quite figure out, that it's hard for me to... So when a kid's one, let me see if I got this. So the first 1,000 years isn't counted until the 1,000 years has passed. So the first millennium passes, and then we have the one tick over. Okay. Then the second millennium passes, because somebody emailed me this. Mark, we have 1,000 years to go. No, we don't. We don't. We're at the end of 6,000 years, but they're getting screwed up. And ooh. I hope you hear that thunder. I don't know if it's coming across. So the first millennium passes, and then we tick it as a one after it passes. Then the second millennium passes, and that's millennium two. The third millennium passes, and we just then call it millennium three. The fourth millennium passes, we call it millennium four. The fifth millennium passes, we call it millennium five. The sixth millennium passes, and we reach 6,000 years. Okay, yeah, that's it. So some people say, Morton, we're just reaching 6,000 years. It's turning 6,000 years. So we have another 1,000 years to go, because they get confused by this 5989. And then in 11 years, we have the year 6,000. So they think it's the beginning of the year 6,000, but it's actually the fulfillment of 6,000 years, even though we're in the 5,000s. I think that's what's screwing people up. 5989. And now it's the dawn of 6,000. So they think we're beginning the 6,000th year. That's it. People think we're beginning this. They're panicky that after 5989, we have 11 more years and we're beginning. They say we reached 6,000. So it's the beginning of the 6,000th year. So we have 1,000 years to go. No, it's the end of 6,000 years, because the time is not marked until the completion of the time. See, now I'm working this out as I'm talking to you in my own mind. And I'm sweating bullets here. It's July in South Florida, and I have no air conditioning. That's all true, but also this idea of keeping track of time. Not an easy thing for a guy who lives a moment at a time, right? That's me. So this is the best thing. Describing a child as being 1 year old, you don't do that until after the first year has passed. So the first time bridge in the Word of God is given us in Genesis 7, verse 6. In that verse, it is said that Noah was 600 years old when the flood began. That's an important piece of information, because by this information, we obtain the year. This is how we get the year 1656 from Adam, that the flood was 1656 from Adam. That's the first year of the flood. And we know it because we have taken the genealogies of Adam to the days of Noah, and then we see that Noah was 600 years old when the flood began. So that was nice of God to give us a time bridge. Whenever there's a gap missing, God fills the gap with some random piece of information. By the way, Noah was 600 years when the flood began. So that gives us a link from the genealogies of Adam listed in Genesis chapter 5 to the flood. And the flood is a major event. So we're being linked to major events. And the events themselves become another verification of the times. Events and times are linked together. Because, as I said yesterday, this is brilliantly coming together. For everything, that is, for every event, there is an appointed time. So that's why we're 600, Noah was 600 years old time at the time of the flood. Thing, 600 years, time, flood, thing. For every thing, there is an appointed time. What's that verse? It's from the Proverbs. Where's that piece of paper? I had it wrote down. Here it is. Had it written down on a piece of paper. Ecclesiastes 3:1. For everything, there is an appointed time. So, 1656. And not 1656 AD, not 1656 BC. 1,656 years from Adam. That's the first year of the flood. However, the calendar of generations can be continued with Genesis 5:32 and Genesis 11:10 through 24 until the birth of Terah. Now, we're looking forward to Abraham. He's another A-lister, major player here, Abraham. And so we're going to make sure we count the years to Abraham because we need, then we're going to sow Abraham, Terah, the father of Abraham, we're going to sow Abraham together with Moses to the law, to the coming of law, and we're going to find out how many years went on between Terah and the law, and all this will be made clear as we continue in this. I could make this a sub-series, but I'm not. We've had enough of those. The unbroken chronology of Eon 3, or of unbroken chronology of, Eon 3. No, because this extends back to the first Eon. Second Eon, actually. Adam was created in the second Eon. The Unbroken Chronology. Here's an elegant title. The Unbroken Chronology Leading Up to the End of the 6,000 Years of Human Rule. That is elegant, indeed. The Birth of Terah in the year 1878. See, all this has new meaning to me. 1878. I don't know what the heck happened in AD 78, 1878 AD, and I don't care. What I care about is what happened 1878 FA from Adam, and that would be the birth of Terah, the father of Abraham. According to Genesis, we should go there. Genesis 11:32, 2083 FA results as the year of the death of Terah. So, Terah is born in 1878, dies in 2083. All this is from Adam, who died at the age of 205 years. Simple math there. Subtract 1878 from 2083. And for the year of the birth of his first son, we obtain the year 1948 F.A. That would be the birth of Abraham. Terah was therefore 70 years old at that time. And this can be verified. We have backup information. We have corroboration. Beautiful. Sweet, cocoa-colored corroboration. Genesis 11:26. Terah was 70 years old at the time of the birth of Abraham. Now, I, Martin Zender, and am sweating up a storm here. Dripping perspiration from my hair and my neck and my chin. But that's fine. But I'm going to stop here. For now, because I haven't figured out what I want to do now. I might give you the chronology now of the fourth 1,000 years, the public appearance of Christ. That's the important thing, because Christ came at 4,000 years. Isn't that interesting? Christ came 4,000 years from Adam. Remember I told you that in Psalm 90, verse 4, not only is 1,000 years as a day to God, it's as a day or as a watch in the night. And there were four watches in the night. So a watch in the night or a day, that's what 1,000 years is to God. And you find that in Psalm 90, verse 4. Jesus came to the disciples in the fourth watch of the night. The night's divided into four periods of, 2 hours each. I don't know. I'm not going to get into details of that. But it's interesting that this pain and death and tears endure for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Tears may endure for the night. Night is a scary time. A lot of times when you were a kid, you worried that there were creatures under your bed and they would come out at night. They slept during the day like many movie stars, many famous people. The goons and the goblins of your childhood nightmares were celebrities in their own right, and they hid under your bed and they slept during the day and they came out at night. So night is a very scary time. And this time period we're living in, Eon 3, is the darkness. Paul says, become as luminaries in the darkness. So figuratively speaking, even though we have evening and morning, we are in a large-scale night right now. And you're children of the day. You wonder why you're so at odds and you're marching to the beat of another drummer? You're marching to the beat of the drummer of the day. You're of the light. You're of the illumination. You're of Christ. And so your light is shining all the time. Even when you're sleeping, the Spirit of God makes his home in you. And yet you are in an eon of wickedness, the current wicked eon, Galatians 1:4. Paul says, let your light shine out of the darkness. These are dark, dark times. And all the demons and the goblins are coming out right now, and we're surrounded by them. That's the problem. That's why you're having a bad day. Because the fictitious demons and goblins, the fictitious boogeyman in your closet at night as a kid, is replaced by real boogeymen. It's replaced by a government that's trying to take over your life. It's replaced by false education that's trying to take over your children. Popular music, popular films that are hijacking your own mental concentration by the internet, by your phone, by your computer. These are the demons and the goblins that are not waiting until night to attack you. They're attacking you in the night, in the epochal night, E-P-O-C-H-A-L, that we're now in. This is an epochal night. It's a night that will endure until the end of this 6,000 years of human rule, which ends at the year at the beginning of the year 6,000. When the clock turns from 5999 to 6,000, that's not the beginning of the 6,000th year. That's the end of 6,000 years. Because a kid is not 1 year old until he's completed a year. So don't be confused, like I was yesterday even. I know you get confused in your mind because we all eat too much sugar, we watch too much crap, we talk on our phones day and night, and we're killing brain cells. Look, if I'm talking to you on the phone and I politely say I have to go, it's because I'm killing brain cells. And I will often tell you, if you're talking to me on the phone, look, I'm losing too many brain cells here. It's not because I'm uninspired or uninterested in the conversation I'm having with you, or that you're not saying anything interesting and stimulating my brain cells. It's the fact that there's a tower 20 miles from here that's broadcasting directly into my phone, which is up against my skull. And I don't think that if these waves, radio waves, microwaves, whatever the hell they are, they're coming from the tower through the atmosphere into my phone. If they can do that, I doubt that the cranial membranes or the osseous portions of my head are going to stop them from going into my brain and killing brain cells. Well, my friends, I have very few brain cells to spare, as you could tell from yesterday's show and probably most of today's. I'm relying on the wisdom of God. I'm relying on what I'm learning from smart people, and I have still able to make sense. I have my faculties with me. I'm able to use logic. I have to take time. It takes me 10 times longer then it would take a smart person to understand what comes from smart people, truly brilliant people. And so I have to really concentrate on it. It takes a long time. I can't afford to lose any more brain cells. But we're all, on our way out. We're all just slowly, slowly decomposing, dematerializing even, speaking of the brain cells. And I'm hanging on. You're hanging on. We're hanging on in so many ways. We're hanging on emotionally, barely. We're hanging on physically, barely. We're hanging on intellectually, barely. I'm hanging on technologically, barely. I don't know how it is that I'm broadcasting this. I'm somehow making my camera work on a program, and I'm putting it on the cloud? and it's being picked up by Selena in Massachusetts, and she's putting it on YouTube, which is being picked up by my sister in Canton. This stuff is all voodoo to me. I just barely know how to do it. I push this button and that happens, and this button and that happens. So, but you're not here for my wisdom. You're here for the wisdom of God. And I point out to you the obvious, such as the week and the times, and that these numbers are put for us into Scripture. Numbers. What was 600 years Noah was at the time of the flood? He was 600 years old. The flood came in 1056. Terah, the father of Abraham, was born in 1878. F.A. These are numbers. I can do simple arithmetic. I can subtract the year of Terah's death from the year of Terah's birth. No, subtract the year of Terah's birth from the year of his death. See, I don't even know which number I'm supposed to subtract. I subtract the lesser number from the greater number, and I get a number that gives me the lifespan of Terah, which was 205 years. I have told you that the sky don't lie, because the sun does its thing irrespective of your opinion of it. Likewise, numbers do their thing in spite of your opinion of them. That's why many people are comforted by math. And many people who just... Math is for people who don't want to think. Because you don't have to think for math. You just have to figure out how to do it. It's mechanical. It never fails. If you just do this and do that, the math will figure it out for yourself. Philosophy is thinking. Math is not thinking. It's just putting things together. It's very comforting for people who like, they use, which side of the brain do you use for practical things? See, I don't even know. It's left side, right side, I don't know. One side of your brain is the Picasso over there. Yet Picasso on the right side of your brain. Or maybe it's the left. I don't know where Picasso lives in your brain. Don't push me. But there's one side of your brain that's more artistic. It has flourishes and it thinks of crazy things. It thinks about, buying natural pancake syrup and putting it on your pancake and dipping it in. Just, I'm going to do that by candlelight and put a vase of flowers there and to create an experience as I ingest copious amounts of sugar. That's the Picasso side of your brain. Then there's the practical side of your brain that tells you when you have to do your laundry, that knows that 2 + 2 = 4. It's all practical. It doesn't care about emotions. It just says, oh, my girlfriend broke up with me. It just marks that information there. It's a statement of fact. My girlfriend broke up with me. It's the other side of your brain that goes, that's the other side of your brain. But the practical side is the one that does numbers. All right? I'm more of a Picasso type side. So I'm struggling with these numbers. But yet even I can do simple arithmetic. And so this is all we're doing here. I'm showing you simple arithmetic. And I'm using the template of another man who apparently has a giant side of his brain that figures out that his girlfriend broke up with me. But the side of this guy's brain that, sends his girlfriend flowers or writes a poem, I don't think it exists in Bader. I could be wrong. I don't know the man personally, never have. I could be disparaging his character. I don't mean to be. I'm just surmising. I could be completely wrong. If I find out I'm wrong, I will admit that I'm wrong. So my apology to any of his ancestors who might be listening to this show. Maybe you can verify this for me. I don't know. Anyway, there's Judy. Yeah, she was definitely more the Picasso type. Yeah. But I'm going to give her information for the practical side of her brain at the Great White Throne. And many people, who never had a practical thought in their lives will be educated. I'm looking at Judy now through my monitor, which is why my eyes are over here. Many people at the Great White Throne will be educated into the nuts and bolts of Christ's sacrifice, which was, if you look at it very, very, very practically, you don't need emotions to grasp the plan of salvation. This is why the Pentecostal church thinks you do need that. And since so many people are emotional and not logical, religion does cater to the freaky side of the brain. But God appeals to our logic. God appeals to math, which is strange for most people to hear, because most people think that God is out there in the ether and that he's just a big cloud with a beard and then he doesn't make any practical sense at all. And if you want to be serious about any topic, you have to leave God out of it. But that is not true. God is so technical, your mind would be blown. Your mind would be blown. In fact, I woke up this morning thinking of a giant leopard. I don't know why I thought of this. But I pictured a leopard, like a huge animal. I don't know what they weigh, 400 pounds, an adult female leopard. And I thought of it being shot, which was horrible. And I thought of the weight of the leopard. And I saw the head of the leopard. This might have been the end of a dream. I saw the head of the leopard, and it was just this creature that walks and sneaks up on its prey, and its head is so big, and it's connected by sinews and tendons and nerves and synapses to the rest of its body. It's a creature of God. I mean, the leopard itself, when you see a cat, any cat, your house cat, tabby, walk by stealth and this animal, this creature, nobody can explain it. Nobody can explain it. They say that it evolved by accident. But I'm looking at a marvel of creation that's self-sufficient. It's not plugged into a wall outlet. The leopard's not. The house cat's not. It's animated by the Spirit of God operating in it. The Spirit of God, it has fearfully and wonderfully made the leopard in the jungle and your house cat. And the weight of it, blood has weight. Lungs have weight. Tendons have weight. The synapses don't have weight. They're just the gaps between the neurons. But I suppose the neurons, if you put them all together with blood vessels, you have quite a significant amount of weight there. And the brain, how does the brain work? The brain makes the leopard stealth through. And this whole thing, it's like God is so technical. I bet if you looked at the numbers behind the leopard, you ever go on a page on your document and you click on the page and you get into like the back of the, how the page is constructed in the deep recesses of the zeros, zeros, and the ones, ones, and I got all this technical gobbledygook, like people who write programming in computers. That's crazy. Microsoft had the genius of putting little happy little icons on your desktop where you click them. And it looks like the right side of your brain, whatever, the Picasso side. It looks very creative, but underneath it is these algorithms and this math and DOS. Remember DOS, the operating program before Windows came on? You had to operate through this black system, and you had to type in code, and all these crazy numbers came out. The huge numbers behind the happy little icon. And so for us dumbed down people, you click the little icon, double click it. Sometimes now you don't even have to do that now. You can do it with a single click. And this happy little picture shows up. But the picture consists, as beautiful as it is, it consists of this depth of information that if you saw the information behind one photo, your mind would be blown. All right, multiply that times a billion, and you have the mind of God that's making a leopard walk and making your little cat lap its water from its little water dish. Are you kidding me? And you tell me this happened by accident? You're telling me that numbers, at the 2 plus 2 equals 4 all the time, never fails. You're telling me that's an accident? You're telling me that the week is an accident and that the sun does this rhythm thing? Atheists are the stupidest fucking people on the planet. I can't, it's just, they really have an education coming. A huge education is on its way. Compliments of God. Yes. But having said that, I don't blame you, because it's simply that God has not illuminated you yet. And yet you're looking at everything, you're watching your little cat lick the water out of its bowl, and still? It's hard for me to explain, except to say that God locks up all together in stubbornness, Romans 11:32, that he should have mercy upon all.